I'm delighted to be have a chance to talk this afternoon and give a brief, and I must say, personalized history of the early childhood care and education movement in the United States and how Erickson Institute fits into it. Now, I'm in an excellent position to do this because I have been in the field since its beginning, practically. I am still working, and Sam, I intend to be here for as many of the next 40 years as I can manage. But let me begin by painting a little background for the field. When I entered it in 1950, you can count up how long ago that was. At that time, it could hardly have been called a profession. I can always remember my father saying, "You're going to do what?" There were only a few half-day nursery schools and even fewer child care centers for children of working parents. Most teachers had little or no training, and what little they had or what little they knew about child development or early childhood education, they learned on the job. Programs were not generally viewed as educationally significant or instrumental in children's later development or learning. Luckily, there were some exceptions. At Sarah Lawrence College, where I went to school, and at places like Bank Street and Vassar College, teachers were prepared for pre-kindergarten through third grade certification, indicating that at least some educators realized the importance of early childhood. It's kind of interesting that after all these years, there is again an interest in the pre-K 3 certificate, and many schools are beginning to convert to pre-K 3 schools because they see the advantage of that combination of grade levels. Another influence in early childhood education was the nursery school movement, which grew following the Second World War. Nursery programs focus primarily on social-emotional development and the benefits for children of interacting with peers and teachers. Indeed, the teacher-child relationship was considered of critical importance. These programs were less concerned with education per se, but the materials they used were designed to stimulate cognitive development: puzzles, unit blocks, paper and pencils, crayons, paints. As I began my career, another dimension of child development drew attention. Renee Spitz had published work showing that infants could fail to thrive and even die from the lack of personalized interaction with caregivers in hospitals. A comparable study was done by Wayne Dennis in an orphanage in Tehran. I had the advantage of his work when we found similar children in Shiraz, Iran, where I lived. I remember a 10-month-old girl who weighed 12 pounds, and could not sit up, was completely unresponsive to touch and to eye contact. She was taken home by one of the doctors in the hospital, and she lived with his family and was transformed by the experiences she had there. From a passive, unresponsive infant, she became an active and verbal and loving 3-year-old. In Iran, I also saw children whose development was derailed by social deprivation, but also children who lived in abject poverty, where malnutrition and disease subverted development. Nevertheless, I learned two important lessons in Iran, lessons that have been repeated all over the world with families that I've worked with. The first is that although some environments are deadly for children, there are many different ways to raise healthy children. The second and the most important thing is that the trajectory of children's lives can be changed by providing new opportunities to them. My years at Erickson have been so satisfying because that is our mission, to create new opportunities for children through our graduate programs, our research, our speeches and writing, and our advocacy. Now, people often compliment me on the foresight of the founders of Erickson Institute: Irving Harris, our first chairman; Maria Pierce, our first president; Lorraine Wallach, and I, the sole faculty members. Let me disabuse you, however, of the idea that we set out to create an institution that would become a leader in a new profession. If you had told us that our little school would not only be around for 40 years, but would have gained the enormous prestige, we would have been delighted, but as surprised as anyone else. We simply saw a need, did our best thinking about what to do, kept abreast of new knowledge, and changed with the times. We enlisted the outstanding and dedicated faculty and committed students, and with Irving and a wonderful board for support and guidance, here we are today. Now, Sam has already told you something of our beginnings in three rooms in the Hyde Park Bank building, intending to train teachers for Head Start. At that time, many people saw the development of poor and minority children as indicative of inherent genetic weakness and or cultural deprivation of their families and communities. Head Start was based on a different premise. If we changed the environment for these children, if we provided comprehensive services, health, nutrition, parent education, psychological and social services if needed, and a preschool experience, poor children would achieve as well as their middle-class peers. In 1966, little did we know that we were on the threshold of a metamorphosis for the field of early care and education and the beginning of a long and productive mission for Erickson. Back then, not many people knew much about working with groups of preschool children and their families. Maria, Lorraine, and I had all worked together at the University of Chicago Lab School in the early 1950s, training teachers, nurses, and other professionals. In the spring of 1966, we were ready to develop a program for Head Start teachers in Chicago. We called it the Chicago Institute for Early Childhood Education, a really very exciting name. And we submitted a proposal for funding to the government. During the summer, we enlisted some faculty members from the University of Chicago and a pediatrician to help us teach courses because Lorraine and I couldn't teach them all, and found schools and centers where students could intern. We recruited students who were interested in young children, mostly mothers who knew something about kids, and we had no formal prerequisites for them. It wasn't until 2 years later when we affiliated with Loyola University to award the master's degree that we required candidates to have a bachelor's degree. Now, by September 1966, we were ready, only waiting for federal approval to start. And as Sam told you this morning, our embryonic institution could have died right there if it hadn't been for Irving Harris. When Head Start failed to come through with the funding, when we were ready, Irving became our booster and backer. He continued to support Erickson through the remainder of his life. And I hope we at Erickson paid him back by sparking what became the consuming passion of the last 40 years of his life, the care and education of poor children, and the institutions and social policies that were needed to foster their healthy development. He was responsible for many innovative and important projects for young children and their families all over the world. But perhaps most importantly, and particularly for the audience here today, he began a movement for individuals and foundations to direct their philanthropy toward early childhood education. And indeed, in the early days of the 60s and 70s, the philanthropy that came from the private foundations and from private individuals sustained not only Erickson Institute, but most of the innovative research and demonstration projects that were done in this country.